standstill agreements. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So another weird phrase here. What are standstill agreements?
Well, these are agreements that require one party to refrain from making any unsolicited move to get control over another company, whether through an overtly hostile move like a hostile tender offer or a proxy contest, or through using indirect tactics to pressure the party to agree to a deal. It's basically designed to keep another company or another potential buyer at arm's length.
And when are they typically installed in the life cycle of a deal?
It's probably, if you're going to have one, it's the very first thing you do. They're typically put in place at the earliest stage of the process. They're often part of the confidentiality agreement that's signed up. And you know, think about it, this is a big ask. And if you're going to ask for them, you're going to ask for them at the point where your leverage is the greatest. And that's before you've shared the confidential information that the bidder is going to need to put together a proposal to buy the company.
And what are the key negotiating points when you're dealing with these things?
Well, I mean, there's a handful of them. I mean, duration, how long it's going to last. Some sellers will, their opening volley will be, 3 years. Buyers often want a year, or even less than a year, in some situations, particularly if you're dealing with technology companies. The extent to which it's going to apply to advisors and financing sources. I mean, a lot of these folks don't want to be bound by standstills. You know, your lawyers, your investment bankers, your lending sources. They typically will push back on an application to the standstill to them. Application to affiliates of the target, you can get pretty far afield as to who this applies to. The terms of any fallaway provisions that are going to allow the standstill to lapse, like, for example, a hostile bid or sometimes even the signing of a definitive agreement might trigger the ability to get out of the standstill. So there's a handful of things that folks typically negotiate on.
What is an, quote, implicit or indirect, end quote, standstill?
Well, there's often language in a confidentiality agreement that limits the way you can use the information that you receive from the provider. And typically it's phrased in ways that, you know, you're only going to use it in furtherance of a negotiated transaction with the seller. And sometimes you'll also see language in there prohibiting a buyer from using the information in any way that is detrimental to the seller. And then in Delaware, the Martin Marietta case a few years back, the Chancery Court said that this kind of limitation on use can effectively prohibit somebody from taking information under a confidentiality agreement and then launching a hostile bid or a hostile proxy contest for a company, even if there isn't an express standstill clause in the agreement. This has been in there for a long time, and I think lawyers did have a sense that there was some amorphous restriction potentially that you might be able to point to there, but nobody was really confident about it. But I think more and more, this is, now that you have had a specific example of it, that this is clearly there's recognition that these kind of clauses can be fairly formidable.
And what about a don't ask, don't waive provision? What is that?
Yeah, that's something that's got a lot of attention in recent years, too. You sometimes will see people include, frankly, fairly typical language historically, what's known as a don't ask, don't waive clause, and that would prohibit a bidder from asking the seller to amend or waive its standstill obligation. And these are typically coupled with language in the standstill that prohibits a bidder from submitting a proposal that hasn't been invited by the seller's board. Now, the justification for these things is actually fairly simple, and that's, look, we're running a process here. We want you to put your best foot forward. We want you to know that if you want to participate in this process, this is going to be your only shot at it. Without this type of language, the argument goes, a buyer could sort of lay in the weeds, see how the auction turns out, and then lob in an offer that's higher than the one that the successful bidder put in place. But it might not be the best offer it would have put on the table if it was compelled to go all in on the auction in the first place.
And is there much litigation over these type of agreements?
You know, there was kind of a spurt of it in Delaware a few years ago. I mentioned that Martin Marietta case, but there was also a series of Delaware cases that looked at don't ask, don't waive provisions and raised issues about whether they might result in a breach of the seller's fiduciary duties. The problem was that putting a contractual muzzle on a potential bidder who might want to top an existing offer could impermissibly allow the board to avoid the possibility of having to communicate with shareholders about information that might be relevant to their assessment of the existing deal. And the board's fiduciary obligations, including its duty to speak shareholders continues all the way through the closing of the transaction. So there was a concern that this might allow a board to put blinders on itself, and that led to some litigation. The courts were really sent some fairly strong signals that these things might be per se invalid, and that concerned folks. But there was a decision in 2013 in the Ancestry.com case that acknowledged that, yeah, these do have some real legitimate business purpose in forcing bidders to put their best bid on the table, and saying that they were not per se invalid, but something that should be looked at on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, the Ancestry.com case wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement of these things, and so you've seen some evolution in recent years modifying these traditional ironclad, don't ask, don't waive formulations to let bidders seek waivers privately, for example. You know, sometimes they'll increasingly see people use fall-away provisions that come into play when an agreement is signed, et cetera. So it makes them more defensible in case they are challenged.
Good stuff. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.